Prologue. Five Perspectives. From Charles Dickens' Bleak House. This is the Court of Chancery, which has as its decaying houses and its blighted lands in every shire, which has its worn-out lunatic in every madhouse and its dead in every churchyard, which has its ruined suitor with his slip-shod heels and threadbare dress, borrowing and begging through the round of every man's acquaintance, which gives to moneyed might the means abundantly of wearing out the right, which so exhausts finances, patience, courage, hope, so overthrows the brain and breaks the heart, that there is not an honorable man among its practitioners who would not give, who does not often give, the warning, "Suffer any wrong that can be done you, rather than come here." The Whistleblower. Emily Gallup's eyes light up when she talks about her former life. A small-town girl from a devoutly Christian family in Northern California, Gallup's red curls, freckles, and deep dimples still cause her to get carded when she orders a glass of wine at a restaurant. But the veneer of cuteness belies both a determination and intellect that earned her a scholarship to Stanford, where she first studied psychology and fell in love with the idea of making a living by helping people conquer their most personal problems. After Stanford, it was Chico State, 2 hours' drive from her hometown of Grass Valley for her master's degree, then back home to Nevada County, a bucolic patch of Northern California dotted with old silver mining towns. That's where she settled into the practice of psychology, in an office nestled among tall pine trees. Like most psychologists, Gallup ended up doing some work for the local family court in Nevada City, the town next door, and the county seat. It didn't take long for the court's director of mediation to realize Gallup's passion and talent. An older man looking for someone to carry the torch, he soon hired her full-time at the court as one of a handful of child custody mediators. Gallup was thrilled. Her energy and idealism, once channeled into evangelical purposes, could now be used in a distinctly practical and non-ideological way. Her work would be inherently meaningful. What could be more important than fostering a healthy environment for children in the midst of crisis? And if she could persuade parents to reach a child-sharing agreement without litigating, a positive outcome could be achieved in hours. Nevada County is one of a handful of recommending counties in California, meaning that the custody mediator not only tries to bring the parents to agree on a custody schedule for sharing time with the children, but if the mediation fails, makes a recommendation to the judge, who then makes the final decision as to custody. The recommending part of mediation has raised eyebrows in the legal community because mediation is supposed to be confidential. In exchange for leaving their attorneys at the door, the parties can trust that whatever they say in the session cannot be used against them later on. Otherwise, they might use mediation to jockey for position in court or to convince the mediator to make a favorable recommendation to the judge, rather than as a means to compromise. Gallup was the perfect saleswoman, the kind of person others tend to trust immediately. Despite her youthful, almost girlish looks, she has an intensity that informs people that they matter. According to several of her former clients, she was the first person they encountered in the divorce process, including their own lawyers, who seemed to listen before taking sides. Gallup tended to earn their respect quickly, even if they didn't get exactly what they wanted out of the mediation. On one occasion, a father whose visitation request she denied later thanked her for taking the time to explain her reasoning. She made it a point to make sure that her clients, as she called them, understood why she felt the way she did. And even though the form they'd signed made it unnecessary, Gallup would tell them what she planned to recommend to the judge. Gallup was so effective and so qualified that the director of the mediation department publicly announced that she would become the next director of mediation in Nevada County Family Court as soon as he retired. But Gallup never got the job. Instead, she was passed up without explanation in favor of a much older woman who lived hundreds of miles away and was known for falling asleep during mediations. When Gallup expressed her disappointment, the director made a vague comment about her not being ready and promised that the appointment of the older woman was temporary. Why such an important job would be doled out on a temporary basis to someone who only worked in the court part-time, and why the process had to be so opaque, was never explained. Gallup was, however, told that she was not fast enough. Although Gallup dug into statistics compiled by California's court administrator and discovered that she was above average in both speed and effectiveness, the court insisted that she was throwing a wrench in a well-oiled machine. In Nevada County, mediators were allotted barely 15 minutes to talk with parents before deciding what should be done with them and their children. In spite of her overall above-average speed, when Gallup tried to spend more time on challenging cases, she was scolded for being too slow. When she attempted to verify the violent backgrounds of fathers and the veracity of mothers, she was accused of being obsessive and biased. Her boss even admonished her for looking into a parent's conviction for sex crimes, calling it irrelevant to the custody determination. Gallup butted heads with the court on other issues as well. The court instructed its mediators to urge parents to sign a form that allowed the judge to decide custody matters without the parents present. Most of the parents, even attorneys, would sign the form with nothing more than a glance. They assumed that signing was a prerequisite to mandatory mediation. They assumed they didn't have a choice. Gallup watched as the form was used to share confidential information with the judge and to make decisions about custody essentially in the judge's chambers. She witnessed a judge make clinical diagnoses of parents and children in the courtroom, while Gallup's boss made custody decisions for the judge. And when parents resisted, Gallup held her tongue as the same judge, whom Gallup and colleagues suspected of drug and alcohol abuse, as well as borderline personality disorder, held the specter of hugely expensive private psychological evaluations over their heads, or threatened to send their children to foster care if the parents failed to toe the line. The Nevada County Court had coined a name for their way of doing things, the emergency room, ER model. The ER model was a way to move a lot of people through the court very quickly, Gallup says, of meeting benchmarks and quotas for processing cases and outsourcing work to friends of the court. Like in an emergency room, only the immediate, urgent problem was handled, refusal to allow visitation, support payment not made, etc. But there was no time to explore the root causes for these emergencies and structure a more meaningful family plan. Indeed, both Gallup's boss and the judge felt that their ER model should be the model for family courts in the entire state, but she felt otherwise. "I didn't understand it," Gallup says. "If a patient goes to the hospital with a broken arm, and they merely put a Band-Aid on some skin scrapes and tell them to come back in a couple of weeks, that patient is just going to come back sicker and sicker." Gallup was being ordered to apply Band-Aids that required families to return over and over again, rather than facilitate agreements that would stick. But within the confines of the ER model, she wasn't given enough time to do more. Had Gallup been able to leave her professional problems at the office, she might have waited out her new boss's retirement. But Gallup, who had lived in Nevada County, where everyone knows everyone else all her life, was confronted by the ripples of the court's behavior on a daily basis. The breaking point came when she read about a wife who had been murdered by her ex-husband with a nail gun. Gallup knew the case. The wife had come to their courthouse less than a week before, begging for protection and describing her husband's threats in vivid detail. But Gallup's boss had dismissed the woman as hysterical and convinced her to go home without a protective order. Having witnessed, but not challenged, the court's dismissing of serious charges based on whims and hunches, Gallup felt personally culpable when she read the news of the woman's murder. She soon came to realize that her superiors had long used a lie to absolve themselves of any responsibility. There will always be unhappy parents because family court always resulted in at least one loser.
To continue listening, purchase the audiobook at divorcecorp.com.